From Foreign Policy, I'm Sarah Wildman, and this is First Person. This week, Syria's white helmets. For 8 years now, Syrians have endured bombings, gas attacks, food scarcity, and a general breakdown of social order as President Bashar al-Assad suppressed any challenge to his regime.
In Syria, the Assad dictatorship, with the help of Russia, is completing the bloody destruction of its largest city. Rebel-held eastern Aleppo is shuddering as bombs rain down, with no place to treat the wounded.
But the Syrian civil war has also spawned scenes of courage and compassion. For more than 5 years, volunteers around the country have shown up at bombing sites minutes after bombardments. They help the wounded and search the rubble for survivors. The group calls itself the Syrian Civil Defense, but it is more commonly known as the White Helmets, after the signature headgear its members wear.
Heartbreaking videos appear to show a scorched earth campaign. Syrian White Helmet rescuers desperately trying to free victims under the rubble.
الحقيقة اللي مدفعك هو الأمل يعني نحنا عم نحاول صناعة الأمل.
The thing that motivated me the most was hope. We wanted to be the ones to instill hope in the lives of people. People are in need of hope, and we wanted to find any way to give people hope.
That's Riyad Al-Saleh, leader of the White Helmets, speaking through a translator. He came by our studios in Washington recently, along with his colleague Kinan Ramani of the advocacy group The Syria Campaign. The White Helmets were in Washington to receive the annual Elie Wiesel Award from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. It's an honor which recognizes prominent individuals who have confronted hatred, helped prevent genocide, and promoted human dignity. Over the years, the White Helmets have expanded their mission. They now provide for other needs of their fellow Syrians, but as you'll hear, each day is filled with nearly insurmountable challenges. Joining Saleh in the delegation that came to Washington was Asad Hana. Before the Civil War, he was a journalist based in Homs. But for the past 2 years, he has worked for the White Helmets from Istanbul. Thanks for coming in, Asad.
Thank you so much.
Tell me about how the organization was formed.
At the beginning of 2012, they were working as several groups working in different areas, not coordinating with each other. And they were working everywhere in Daraa, Damascus countryside, Homs, Hama, Idlib, Aleppo, Latakia, everywhere. Maybe under different names, but they were doing the same activities. And in 2015, this idea came and they wanted to sit all together. They sit for many days and they were, every team was talking about how they were working, how they are operating, and they found out that they have a lot of sharing things, the same things they are doing. So why we don't work together, then we will be bigger and stronger.
But it was sort of random, almost ad hoc, that, you know, a group of men who had gotten together to try to help out after an attack. How did it work?
Because there was need for that. Like, the airstrikes were attacking all the areas, and there was no services for this area. There was no ambulances, no civil defense working. So there was a need, and it's the inspiration of the humanity that someone will just run after the airstrikes and just dig to pull the bodies from the, under the rubbles.
And they were saving not just bodies, they were saving people.
They were saving people, saving animals, saving properties, everything. Like, I remember that 2 years ago, there was saving for a chicken and the cats and saving for a dog in Ghouta, and it was very injured and very sick, and they treated it. And then the dog stayed in the center until the dog was killed later by another airstrike and because of the hunger also.
How did people join?
There is a lot of requests while I come every day to the social media that, how can I join you? How can I be with you? Not only from Syria, by the way. Like, there is a lot of foreign activists and foreign people want to join from all around the world. But we always say, no, we only accept Syrians to work with us. But there is a clear process how to join whenever there is a need for any additional volunteers in some areas. We announce about we have place to work here, and the interested people, they can apply, and then there's some kind of interviews, and then they can join after they have the training which they need.
And now there is specific training.
Yeah, it depends on what kind of work you will do.
What kinds of work do they do?
Yeah, we are doing about 15 activities. Okay. So there is the search and rescue, there is the firefighting, there is the camp services, there is community engagement, which they do services for the community when there is kind of peace or truce, ceasefires. There is the woman empowerment program also to support the woman power. And now, just 2 weeks ago, there was election. And two women now occupied seats in the board of directors. And different kind of activities. It depends on what the society need, what the need of those people.
So it started out as an entirely volunteer organization that seems to have professionalized somewhat.
Yes, because they had to improve their skills. It started, as I said, they were just running after the bombs. Mm-hmm. But later, when you are an organization and when there is a leader for this organization, so that leader will have responsibility to protect the volunteers, then you will not accept to lose your volunteers because of something wrong happened. So the training needs to improve how to protect themselves and how to carry the injured people, how to be safe when you are doing the firefighting.
It's almost counter to human nature to run into danger, I suppose. You know, there's an attack and you know there can be a second attack coming. What motivates people to run in?
Last week, the day before we came here, there was operation. It was running for 11 hours. More than two centers responded to this operation, and about, let's say, 20, 25 volunteers were working for 11 hours digging and trying to do anything. And at the end, they rescued a woman, and they had her alive. So, and all the bomb was around them. If you go to the news about Syria for the last couple of months, the bomb everywhere in the north. Even they started to use the bombed barrel again. So they didn't care about that. They just wanted to bring this mother again to her children. So that's what motivates those guys. The hope and to have someone back to the life after he's just like cannot breathe under the rubble.
And what does it feel like? What does it smell like when you're in there? Is there shouting?
The sense of the area will smell like a death because it's like bombs was there, fire sometimes, and bodies under you, and dust all around you. So you can imagine, just close your eyes and think about it. What's that person is in the middle of this mess, and he's just looking down, focusing on something, focusing on his target, to save someone and to find someone.
And how do they know someone's in there? From relatives, from...
This is how they train them. So first of all, they check with the people who are around, like who was in this house, do you know who was here? And not when the building is falling down, not all the people will be under. So some people will be out, some people will be around the house. So they will ask, was there anyone in the house or something? And then also they try to talk with the people downstairs. And three days ago, a cat rescued a family.
Because the cat knew the family was there?
No, there was a cat in the house of the family, and the family were all unconscious. But the cat was mewing. So the volunteers hear the cat voice, and they wanted to rescue the cat. They didn't know that there is a family, and they kept working for hours. That was in Idlib. And then they brought the cat, and when they reached the cat, they found the family.
And the family was okay?
The family was okay, but the cat died.
I have a sort of practical question. How is the group funded?
When the White Helmets started, they started as a volunteer. There was no fund. But later, when the countries and the organizations saw the impact of their work, the big value of their work, they wanted to support them, to have more volunteers and to have more equipment and to have more training. So the White Helmet now is funded by many countries, Germans, the Americans, and Denmark, Qatar also. They just joined it this year.
There were conspiracy theories online against the White Helmets. Can you tell me about them?
Yeah, of course. The conspiracy theory against the White Helmet started after 2015. It started away after the Russians started to act in Syria, and they sent the Russian army to do the military operation to support the Assad regime. And they came and say that we are coming to bomb the terrorists and to counter terrorism in Syria. But for us, as first responders, we were always documenting what's going on and what's the targeted areas around us, because we are running right away after the bomb. So we are arriving maybe in 1 minute after the attack. So we have the GoPro on the helmets. We always filmed what we are doing. So we documented every attack of the Russians that proved they are coming to and attacking the Syrians, the civilians, the hospitals, the schools, the search and rescue team, the civil society organizations. And that's bothered them. Also, we documented the chemical attacks where they claimed that there was no chemical attacks. So that put the Russians in a critical situation and they wanted to finish us. They are using their propaganda, and there is a million of the accounts from the bugs account and the normal accounts running against us. And the investigation which was run here in America to find out if there was Russian intervention in the American election, that investigation found out that the same accounts which was used by the Russians to intervene in the elections, thousands of these accounts was used at the same time against the White Helmet. And after the result of this investigation, there was about 1,000 accounts they shut down, and this was the main accounts leading the propaganda campaign.
Does the disinformation war against the White Helmets affect how you're perceived in Syria?
No, totally, because those people in Syria, they know us. Like, it's your community. The White Helmets are not operating in foreign areas. The White Helmet in Idlib, they are from Idlib. The White Helmets from Aleppo, they are from Aleppo. The White Helmet in Homs, they are from Homs. So, like, I'm helping my family. I remember there was a volunteer from the White Helmet in Ghouta. He rescued his son, and his son died in between his arms. Then he took it, he put it on the clinic, and he came back to help another families. Those guys helped over than 116,000 people in Syria so far, and they're still going on. So this community knows them so much, and they always thanking them for what they are doing.
Asa, do you help with the rescues themselves?
For me, no.
Can you tell me about what your life was like before the conflict?
I studied commerce, and I did journalism work for about 4 years.
How old are you?
27.
The conflict is in its eighth year.
Yeah.
So this has been the majority of your adult life.
Yeah.
Do you have hope for Syria now?
I'm working because I have hope and because we have to build the hope.
Is the war over?
No.
What would bring an end to the war?
The justice and the accountability.
And is that an international process?
It should be.
And what would it look like?
To bring everyone who committed war crimes and killed any innocent person. Anyone.
Has anyone living in Syria now not seen death?
No. Maybe some areas is living in peace, like away from the fight, away from the clashes. But they have their own death. They have the death from the leak in the service community, like poor medical services, from the hunger because of the economy dropping down, from the hunger because the cars has no fuel to take them to the hospitals. I'm hearing a lot of death because of the heart attacks also. So it's everywhere.
What does the future hold for Syria?
We will have good future, but that will be after the zero point, and the zero point should be starting with accountability and the justice to bring the life again for the families of those who lost their beloved people. We lost about 500,000 people so far. So we have 500,000 family. Those family cannot continue their life before they have the justice.
What does an organization like the White Helmets mean for keeping civilian Syrians hopeful for the future?
When there is people in area without any services, without any help, if they will be under attacks, nobody will help them. If they will be in a camp without any water or something, if they will be like what happened 3 months ago, there was massive rain on northern Syria and the camps started to flood. If nobody will help them, they will be desperate and they will start to think about leaving the countries, and that's what happened sometimes. But when they know that they will have help from some teams when they are in need, so they will have the hope to stay in their country, to stay in their homes. When the camp started to flood, the White Helmets were there to help the people, to move the people to safe places for those who their tents were destroyed, to provide with the water, to provide with first aids or anything they needed.
So the White Helmets have stepped in as a form of civil society and not just doing search and rescue. They're helping out people who are...
Yes, as I said, we are doing many activities now in Maine, like it's 15, but it's changeable according to what the community needs. And that's why we are more under pressure now, because we are doing a lot for about 4.5 million.
What's your role with the group?
I'm chairman's office manager.
And where are you based?
Istanbul.
Do you see a future for yourself in Syria?
I don't think about that. I don't think about what I will do. I'm thinking about what should I do.
And what should you do?
Pushing to have future, not for myself. If it's for myself, I'm here in DC now. If it's for myself, I should stay here. I should go to Europe. I should go to somewhere else to start to build my future, if it's about me. But I should do something for the community, for the people, for those who lost their families, for the displaced people, for more than 10 million people out of Syria to go back.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you so much.
That was Asad Hanna, a member of the White Helmets. He and Raed Al-Saleh, the leader of the White Helmets, were in Washington recently to receive the Elie Wiesel Award from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. Special thanks to Assad's colleague and translator, Kinan Rahmani, of the Syria Campaign, for also speaking with us. First Person is produced by me, Sarah Wildman, along with Benjamin Soloway. Our editor is Rob Sachs, and our executive editor for news and podcasts is Dan Efron. We'll be back next Friday. Thanks for listening.